What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host. He's Thomas Trance. He covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Big Monday edition of the show coming up. Harmon Dial from The Athletic will join us at 12:30 to chat Canucks. And also, looking forward to this one, our pal from The Athletic, Sean Gentile, will join us at 1. He was in the building yesterday on Long Island as Alex Ovechkin broke Wayne Gretzky's goal-scoring record. So we'll get the first-hand account from Sean Gentile at 1 there. Drance, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You have a good weekend?
I did have a good weekend, yes.
Well, I watched the Anaheim Ducks play live, which
So you had a great weekend.
Which was a unique... I mean, they were so bad. Whatever they did with Lucas Dostal in keeping him in there, in not calling a timeout, like if you're going to use a timeout, I don't like using timeouts to like stem the tide of momentum because I think you want it for late in the game usually. Also sort of a habit of mine, given that like it's a thing that I always think about because you usually need it to call a timeout or challenge a play. You don't need it anymore, but you used to. So that sort of got me out of it. But to not call a timeout as the Canucks scored 5 goals in 4:30 until after they'd done the damage was one of the most bizarre head coaching things we saw all season long.
Well, you don't want to get it to 6.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't let them get to 6 in a row.
Stem the tide.
Got to stop the bleeding here.
And then to leave Dostal, who started 17 of 20 in. You know, like, what are we doing here? I thought that was inept at a very high level. Not something I don't expect from the Ducks, but I thought that was inept. And then, obviously, that third period I thought was a mismatch of the highest order against the Vegas Golden Knights last night.
We'll get into those two games from the weekend. Right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 7th, and we'll start with the headlines. And look, we're Canucks talk. We will, in all likelihood, only have this Canucks season to talk about for, what, 9 more days, at least the regular season of the actual game, the games portion. But we're also a hockey show, so, I mean, We gotta talk about the real headline from the weekend, which is, of course, Alex Ovechkin setting the NHL's all-time goal record by scoring his 895th career goal on Sunday against the Islanders. As I said, Sean Gentile is going to join the show later, so we can talk about it more then. But it just feels like fundamentally wrong to come on the air and not lead the show with that topic. A once-in-a-generation moment, right? Like, it was 30 years ago that Wayne Gretzky broke Gordie Howe's. It was 30 years before that that Gordie Howe broke Rocket Richard. So really a once-in-a-generation type moment and just a pretty awesome one and a great moment for the game on Sunday. No Canucks tie-in here. No, what does this mean? You know, I know in the morning show, shockingly, they were connecting it to Elias Pettersson, given some of Alex Ovechkin's ups and downs earlier in his career. But again, it's just... I just want to take a moment to appreciate what we saw on Sunday. It was awesome.
You know, in hockey, we so often talk about guys who play the right way or what it takes to win or the overall culture of sublimating individuality and individual goals for the success of a team. And Alex Ovechkin kind of stuffs everything you previously thought about the sport in a locker and goes away laughing like, you know... From the yellow skates through to the, you know, fact that he's like a Russian winger, that he was this elite rush attacker. Like, some of his stats, man, are completely insane. Like, Nathan MacKinnon is going to lead the NHL in shots this season, and he's going to finish somewhere like 330 shots on goal. Alex Ovechkin recorded more than 350 shots on goal in 10 of his first 12 complete seasons in the NHL.
Didn't he go like over 500? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
528.
528 over an 82 game season is so ridiculous. Now look at the hits, since you're on the hockey reference. Look at the hits. This is going to be the first full season of Ovechkin's career where he didn't throw 150 hits in a season.
Yeah.
That's two a game.
That year he was credited for, he had 528 shots and 243 hits.
This is not a guy who has been durable because no one can catch him to hit him, or because he's got like incredible contact balance and avoids contact. This is a guy who's played a power forward game, you know, absolutely running guys into the wall and then jumping into the wall after goals too sometimes for his entire career. He began, you know, his NHL journey as this incredible rush attacker on these run and gun Boudreaux, Mike Green, Alexander Semin, you know, deeply flawed but super memorable Capitals teams. He ends up moving, you know, under Adam Oates to that sort of corner spot, the left circle, and reinvents himself, you know, at 30 plus years of age already. Second act of his career sort of thing, as the league's most lethal stationary attacking option, completely changes the nature of how teams attack opponents on the power play across the ensuing decade. Ends up winning a Stanley Cup playing for Barry Trotz, who, you know, like you could not land in a more dissimilar place from sort of where you started. And then tacks on 4 or 5 productive years looking like an NFC North lineman, right? And just being like the coolest, most productive, most unique goal scoring threat we've ever seen. The undisputed GOAT NHL goal scorer. You know, you sort of put it all together and it's just like, this guy is completely unique, completely original. He breaks everything we think about hockey. And his record is completely unassailable. GOAT goal scorer, Stanley Cup winner, literally nothing you can shoot at a guy who was always just completely and uniquely himself and is an all-time great as a result.
And we'll move on here, but just the point you made about we're so conditioned to think about, well, it's not about your individual goals, right? It's about the team goals, and that's great, and that's obviously true of team sports. One of the fascinating angles of this has been Ovechkin doing it in the midst of a dream season for his team, and I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, partly because they did the kind of sped-up ritual thing in order to support him going for this record, and it's also paid huge dividends in the team record. But you can also just see it as a galvanizing force for the team, how much it means for that franchise for them to all be playing in support of Alex Ovechkin. So it's a really cool moment where his pursuit of greatness is not just an individual thing. It would have been really easy for him to hang on, you know, into his early 40s and just, okay, playing on some really bad teams, but I just got to get this record. The fact that it happened while he's, you know, the elder statesman on this really exciting, relatively young team that's kind of completely turned over since they won the Stanley Cup and is in this position, I think is a cool moment and just evidence that they can go together. The pursuit of this individual greatness can be this galvanizing force that lifts the rest of the team up too.
Well, and two last things really quickly, and then we'll pivot to the Canucks. One, we often see records like this, like Hall of Endurance type records, the true accumulators. They end up sort of breaking these records often being like diminished versions of themselves, often on bad teams because they can't lift that team single-handedly. And the Capitals made this unique in part because Brian McClellan and company have done such a preposterously good job of, you know, identifying Carberry, a good BC boy, as the clear Jack Adams winner and the head coach of that team, landing just a ton of wild bets as pro in terms of their pro scouting and their amateur scouting, and, you know, locking up guys that they've brought in like Protas to deals that lots of people thought were wild, only to have that bet hit significantly. That's a cool element of this, is we don't often see these records get broken by guys who are still competing for, you know, in the Capitals' case, the best team in the Eastern Conference, still in the mix to win the President's Trophy this year. And how often do we see these records and it's like he's two away from breaking the record and it takes a week?
Yes. Yeah.
Ovechkin scoring 6 goals in 5 games and just like that Friday show that he put on with Spencer Knight standing on his head in the last minute. I thought that was a really cool aspect of this too. Like, he didn't just break the record. He broke it forcefully. He broke it from his office on the power play with like a signature overpower an elite goaltender shot. I mean, it was so cool. Everything about it was so cool.
It was great. Yeah. Anyways, I just wanted to take a few minutes off the top of the show to recognize and celebrate a really awesome moment for Ovechkin for the game of hockey as well. Back to the Canucks, as we
back
mentioned.
Back to reality.
Yes, back to the second most entertaining and joyful story in the NHL right now. The Vancouver Canucks. They split a set of home games against the Ducks and the Golden Knights. As a result, they're on the brink. And if they lose tomorrow in regulation in Dallas, they will be officially eliminated from playoff contention. And, I don't want to dwell on that Ducks game too much. I mean, I will say, look, at least.
Well, franchise history.
Yeah, a matinee game late in the season against another also-ran team.
No. They're not just an also-ran.
Well, they are.
They're a moribund team.
Fair.
They are.
At least.
They are the league leader in opportunity cost incurred this season.
At least the Canucks gave the fans their. Like something cool. Like, wow, I was there when they set the record, the franchise record for most quickest five goals. Like, okay, that's something.
It's something.
You know what I mean?
I don't know that you're putting it on a t-shirt.
No, you're not. But it's like, hey, at least you probably don't feel like ripped off having gone to that game.
I mean, it was a fun game. Like that run of goals. And then Max Sasson gets the nice five-hole finish. Yeah, look, Quinn Hughes crushed it in that sequence. Lots of Canucks players got rewarded. Points night. Points nights are good at this time of year.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Just something. Something, some positive energy, something to cheer for in the building, something cool to grab onto. And then yesterday, it's the Vegas Golden Knights and, I don't know, a decently entertaining game. I was there doing the intermissions of Bick through two periods.
Did you think so?
I thought it was fine.
I thought it was long.
It was long.
That game felt like...
It did take a long time.
It took a long time. That game felt slow in a really weird way. And then, of course, it just felt like... Honestly, that third period had the feel of what you sometimes see in a playoff series that's fundamentally over, but it's not quite over yet, where you just know that one team has solved the other, and really it's just a matter of can the other team get a bounce?
Mm-hmm.
Or does the other team take one of their opportunities before overtime?
Yeah.
You know, before the end of the regulation. And that was the whole dynamic of that third period. I actually was kind of shocked by how thoroughly outclassed the Canucks were. But maybe I shouldn't be. I mean, the Canucks, even with a full lineup, have struggled against the top teams in the West all season long. Right? Like, they haven't measured up to this caliber of opponent all season long, except Colorado. And, you know, I mean, Vegas has beaten them three times. And most of them have felt like this. It's like, it's close, but it's close the way like a 1-0, you know, Man City victory over Brentwood is, right? It's like, it's close until they blow it wide open in the 77th minute. Like that's how that game felt to me.
Yeah. And I thought Vegas was kind of on the cusp of taking over for much of the night and just didn't. And then they decided to in the third period and that was it. And as you said, like we've seen Vegas do that against full health Canucks squads, let alone the one they were icing.
Canucks power play looked decent. I know they didn't get rewarded for it, but I liked that Pugh Suter setup. That was awesome.
The takeaway for me, honestly, was talking after the game with the praise of Nils Höglander, and specifically the line, a lot of guys can learn from Hoggy. And you think about the trajectory of Nils Höglander's season. Yes, starting, actually, people forget, on a very high note with the praise he was getting coming out of training camp and earning the new deal. But then really plummeting and tough times for Nils Höglander in the doghouse, and to kind of come back full circle to where Rick Tocchet is comfortable pointing to him as an example of a, hey, that's what we need. That's what we want to see more of. I think that's a big deal for Nils Höglander.
Yeah, so I'm parsing mailbag questions right now at The Athletic. We submitted an open call late last week, hundreds of submissions. And, you know, one question that I wanted to get into but didn't was I had a question about player development under Rick Tocchet, young players in particular. And you know, we've heard these sort of things thrown about, like, look at Clayton Keller scoring after Tocchet left Arizona. And it's like, wow, you're telling me the 21-year-old scored more at the ages of 22, 23, 24 than he did at 19, 20, and 21? Like, shocking. How I can't believe Rick Tocchet would have done this. Or people are like, Phil Kessel's offense fell off a cliff after he left Pittsburgh. And it's like, or did Phil Kessel's offense fall off a cliff when he turned 33, 34, 35 as a guy who notoriously didn't mind his fitness level the way that, you know, most of the guys we see who have incredible longevity do. So anyway, I was thinking about this and, you know, I think the notion of Tocchet struggling to develop young players is like one of the most fundamental misunderstandings about sort of what we've seen across the last two seasons. Like, first of all, Tocchet got the season we saw from Hoglander last season out of Hoglander after he'd been thoroughly stuffed into Bruce Boudreau's, you know, Chateau Bow Wow across his previous season and a half, right? Like, Tocchet was the guy who was coaching him when he got the 24 goals, percentage driven though they were. And even over the course of the season, I would say, like, the last 2 months of Hoglander are honestly better in terms of how he's actually played, not his production, but how he's actually played, than anything we saw from him last season. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Like, this is a player who I think we should see as being on an upward trajectory now versus where he was at the start of the year versus where he was last season, even if the production lies to you. And I was just sort of thinking about it, and it's like, you know, Stamkos' rookie year, Barry Melrose got fired 17 games in after, like, publicly calling out his 18-year-old super rookie, saying, like, he's not ready for the NHL. And, like, it was Tocchet who came in and rebuilt Stamkos' confidence, according to Steven Stamkos, the account of Stamkos himself. This was the guy who gave me the confidence that I could do it in the NHL. And by the way, it took him being, like, scratched regularly. Like, he didn't play him every... He kind of did the Leo Carlson thing that the Anaheim Ducks did last year.
Scratches, yeah.
100%. Had him, like, move in with Gary Roberts, the whole kit and caboodle. Next year, he scored 50, right? Tocchet hires Oates. They put him in the 1-3-1. Stamkos scores 50 in his second season. Like, that to me means a lot more than what happened to Kessel's scoring rates as he aged, or Keller's before he was prime aged. You look at that when he ran the Penguins defense during those back-to-back cup finals. Like, yeah, obviously Letang and those guys, but Olli Maatto was playing top 4 minutes. He was 21.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Dumoulin was playing top 4 minutes. He was 24. Justin Schultz came in and they rebuilt his game, right? And then you think about the roster composition that the Canucks have worked through. Like, let's be real. This has not been an organization that's had developmental talent on it, with the exception of Hoglander, and I guess you could say Pod Colson for stretches of last season, during Tocchet's tenure. Like, there wasn't a Lekkerimäki in the system. There wasn't a Tom Volander in the system. There wasn't an Elias Pettersson in the system. The team traded away all their draft picks in the final closing years of the Benning era. It's not like he had a Dylan Gunther to work with where we could evaluate, you know? So I just sort of think the test for Tocchet's development of players really comes next season, not because he's done a poor job of it, but because the opportunity just hasn't been there with the composition of this roster and what this team's goals have been.
Yeah, my immediate reaction to that question is like, what young players?
Right.
Well, what are we talking about? It's such a small sample size here in Vancouver to judge meaningfully. And as you said, with Philander and Lekkerimäki and full season of DPD, all that, we should get a much better idea of it next year. Okay, quickly to wrap up some things from the whiteboard here. Broadsheet, Elliot Friedman on Saturday on Hockey Night in Canada, reporting that Elias Pettersson hasn't given up hope on playing this year, although Friedman said one source said it's unlikely he returns. We'll see where that goes. I mean, with mathematical elimination just around the corner, it would be surprising to me to see Elias Pettersson again this year.
And Canucks met a tragic number down to two.
Yeah.
So regulation loss, the next time they lose in regulation or the next time the Minnesota Wild pick up 2 points, it's over.
Yeah. It's a travel day.
It's over. It's over, yeah.
It's a travel day today for the team. They're going down and playing in Dallas tomorrow. And I will just say, and we can maybe talk about this later in the show. Look, I get it. You don't want to shut down Quinn Hughes until you're mathematically eliminated. Maybe that happens in Dallas tomorrow. It's a tough conversation to happen with Quinn Hughes. At the very least, can we dial his minutes back here, right? So he's not up over 25 minutes in these games that don't mean anything. If he wants to be in the lineup as the captain to kind of go down with the ship, that's fine. That's admirable. But let's keep it to like 19 minutes if we can. 20 minutes instead of 26.
Like the 22:30 against the Ducks is fine.
Yeah.
Especially because a lot of that's logged on the power play. But yeah, 26 and a half.
Like, it's fine. Okay, I get the symbolism of keeping him in the lineup until you're mathematically eliminated, but it needs to just be much more carefully managed.
I will say it sucks, man, because this guy put together the caliber of season that should have 100%. Absolutely had him in contention to repeat as the Norris winner. But when you really think about it, the gap between him and Makar is subtle. I think it still favors Quinn Hughes, but it's close enough, surely, given that Makar scored 30 goals and their points per game is roughly identical. It's close enough that, like, the availability that Makar has had, the fact that he hasn't missed games like Hughes has, and the fact that the Avalanche have had team success while Vancouver hasn't, mm-hmm. like tilts it really decisively in Makar's favor, even for a voter like me, which just sucks because that is almost all out of Hughes's personal control, right?
Yeah.
So that's the part of this that like I really agonize over.
It's tough, and it's just the fact that he has been giving it his all while clearly not near 100% despite what he says, or at least not at 100% effectiveness. It's been tough to watch. It's admirable, but again, tough to watch, and you feel...
He was definitely going to hit 20 goals this year. You know what I mean? Like, he was going to accomplish some really incredible stuff before the injuries, and obviously the bottom fell out on this team.
This might be our last edition of the playoff standings update, although I guess we'll get the standings update in for lottery position as well, draft position, once they're mathematically eliminated.
And we can use it to, like, talk matchups or potential matchups
but,
or stakes.
Are per Dom's model, they're in the sub 1% playoff odds category now.
Hit the drop, buddy. Yeah. Hit the drop, Arash.
Along with Columbus, Buffalo, Utah, that group. That's where they are now.
Ouch.
So, there you go.
Ouch. Hit the drop.
Which one?
Oh, it's over. The one you just hit.
I think I deleted it. I'm working on something for the break.
A one-use drop. Boom.
Yeah, you guys got it once. So you don't go back to the well again.
So here's how I'm going to spotlight the gambling odds tonight, by the way. Okay? The Dallas Stars are favored to win the West at plus 260. Mm-hmm. The Avs, the Oilers, the Golden Knights are all plus 475, and the Winnipeg Jets are plus 550. Everyone else is like well back, right? The Blues are 18-1. The Jets, the Wild are 22-1. The Kings are 8.5-1. Okay? The Canucks' record in their 13 games against the top five teams, that class of five, is 4-9-0 with half of those wins, half of those four wins coming against an Avalanche team that looks nothing like the Avalanche team that they defeated. They were outscored in those games by a massive margin, by the way, like huge. And their 82 game pace was 50 points across all of those games. We saw it last night in that third period, but I do think it's worth emphasizing, like, Vancouver didn't lose to the teams they should beat very often. Like, I heard some chatter that's like, we're here because of what happened against Nashville.
And
like they crushed the Sharks in all their games. They crushed the Chicago Blackhawks in all their games. They took 2 of 3 from Anaheim. Like, they took care of business against the inferior teams in the West. This year's team, even before the drama really overtook it, just couldn't hang with the best of the best.
That is the whiteboard for today. We will take a break. Harmon Dial from The Athletic to chat Canucks next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Or did Phil Kessel's offense fall off a cliff as a guy who notoriously didn't mind his fitness level?
Good one, Randy. Good one.